This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery, like McKenna, brings a top-tier lineup. With Leif Davis-esque delivery right to your door, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win. Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to the preview show edition of the Blue Monday podcast, a three times weekly show looking into all things Ipswich Town. I'm your host, Richard Woodward, and I'm delighted to welcome back the brilliant Harry from Bath. Harry, how's it going?
Hi, Rich. How are you doing? All good here. Don't know what everybody else did last weekend. It was a sad week. And to be fair, Lambert talked about it in his press match. We're recording this Wednesday evening. Lambert, in his Preston pre-match conference, mentioned that they'd had a lot of the club had a few days off. And what I did was, because I was quite glum at the weekend, and but I watched the Sir Bobby Robson film.
Oh, brilliant. It's excellent,
and
isn't it?
It's brilliant. So good. I've seen it before. My partner hadn't seen it, so we watched that together. And it was, it was great to see the players training at the ground. Happy, sort of. It was a consoling moment, I guess, is the best way to describe it. And certainly cheered me up, I have to say. You know, happier times and all that. But it's been an interesting week. But as I say, move onward and upward. Yeah.
Hopefully so. Mm. Well, downward and upward, hopefully, you know. That's an allusion to where we're going there. I've been trawling through old bits of footage and posting a few bits of it, actually, over the weekend as well. So that was my kind of tonic. Looking back when we could score goals and we're a pretty dominant force in football. Not so much anymore. Just a heads up for everyone who's listening to this before we get into the nuts and bolts and the meat on the agenda. We're going to split this over two shows. So we're going to kind of do a bit of a recap of the Birmingham game. We'll focus obviously on Preston North End. We'll do some of the questions, maybe 50% or so of the questions, and then we'll be back. We'll be back to record it tomorrow, but this will probably a Swansea edition, a slightly shortened Swansea edition, will be out probably Saturday, I would guess. And we'll come back and finish off those questions there. So keep a lookout for the two editions, two for the price of one. We're always adding value, me and Harry. And this weekend will be no different. Let's go back to this this kind of symbolic moment in our club's history, really. This kind of relegation confirmed against Birmingham City. You and Ben, with your kind of glass half full, as it were, predicted the 1-1. I went with the 2-2 defeat. It sounded a game of two halves again. We've had those instances before this season, and again the chances to maybe turn the draw into a win and failed to do so. But your thoughts, Harry? More the game, the fixture itself, less interesting than kind of the symbolism for the club in terms of relegation. Your thoughts? This was debated a lot on the flagship show, but your thoughts on now relegation has confirmed what this kind of this means and how we kind of look forward, or can we look forward?
It's a moment of danger and a moment of opportunity, really, isn't it? In that we could, if we don't regroup and regroup intelligently, I'm not even saying quickly, it may not be even a one-season process, but if we don't get the strategy right, we could, it could take a little while, but at the same time, it is a moment of opportunity. When we look at some of the questions later, you can actually see how, given how far behind the rest of, many of the teams in the league, I should say, we are at the moment, sort of soldiering on in this league isn't going to do us any good. We need it needs such a rebuild. In a way, relegation could be the it looks to me to be a good way of turning it around, and we can rebuild properly. And as I say, get the car into the garage, take the parts out, and put them back together again properly. That's the hope, anyway. But you're right about the Birmingham game. It summed up the season in many ways. Objectively, it was a fair result. It was a game of two halves. They dominated the first. We came back into it after the break. Christian Pedersen, their left back, who he did flag up, he did get turned over for the second goal. It was for our goal. I should say, the second goal in the game. As I say, he got mugged. It was a good leveler. And
Jukovic was the striker that was probably more of a threat as well, which I think I called out.
It's interesting. Yeah, but as I say, in that sense, to be fair, the Birmingham players at the end were very diplomatic. But the other thing to say is that post-match, I've had all my non-Ipswich fans, fan friends coming in, just saying, wow, they saw the full, what happened full-time with the way the team was given a standing ovation. That was clocked by the wider footballing world. Mm. That's got to be mentioned as well, definitely.
Yeah, but, good on the Blue Action guys again. And Joe,
it was great.
Called out on the flagship show. I just want to get your kind of take on... there was quite a lot. I enjoyed the flagship show. There was some really good assessment of the situation. We'll briefly talk about season tickets because the details were announced on the day that we're recording, and we're going to delve in a little bit into that on the flagship show as well next week. But your kind of thoughts about you've mentioned it before about. I don't think anyone expects or demands that we bounce back at the first opportunity, but we really need to start strongly next season, don't we? It's this kind of fear that this stagnation, whilst Lambert's galvanised the squad, he'll probably bring in some additions and have a whole summer to kind of coach the team. We actually really do need to shake off this kind of malaise and this expectation that you don't need to win, it's fine, we're only Ipswich in the Championship, we haven't got the parachute money. Down in League One, we really need to get started quickly, don't we?
It's interesting, yeah. There's a couple of points. One, the malaise in some ways, and this has come up in other discussions during the week as well, that malaise goes back even before Lambert times. Mm. Things were already beginning to stagnate, even under Mick, that final season, the second half of that final season, we were beginning to, that brilliant start we'd had in Mick's last season, that brilliant August, in a way, masked a multitude. That has to be said. It's, as far as League One is concerned, you see, I don't think we're going to, I could be wrong, we could be 5 points clear by the beginning of October. I don't see it that way. I think we have to be patient. I think we've got to feel our way into the season. It's not how we start the season. It's how we build momentum during the season that is important. So, yes, it's important that what we don't do is stagnate. But I'm more interested in seeing momentum by the time we get to September, October, November. Going back to the glorious days when Bobby was around, we'd often have a quiet start and then we go on this charge.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just write, okay, right, suddenly it would click in late September, early October, and then we go on this absolutely sort of madcap run, and then we'd finally run out of we'd be exhausted by the time we got to late March, early April, and then we'd just see if we could limp over the line. But I think, leaving the end bit aside, I think to me that's what I want to see this season. Not necessarily that we get off to a blistering start, but that I see that there is some momentum within the way the team is playing, and there's that incremental improvement game on game. Things are starting to come into shape. We were hoping for it under Hurst. It never happened, and it did start coming together all too falteringly by the end under Lambert. If we'd been able to get a decent striker who was stayed fit, or two strikers who'd stayed fit in January, who knows, those one-alls would have been ones, a lot of them. We lost a goal in so many games, or we sold ourselves short by a goal in so many. So that's my take on it. Yes, we don't want to start, we don't want to have a, we don't want to be in the relegation zone in September, definitely not. No, but I'm just, but just as equally, be measured, I guess, is the best advice I would give. Don't know whether you'd agree with that or not.
Yeah, I can understand that. I think that's a fairly pragmatic view. I guess something that I've picked up a few people and some of the questions were along these lines on the flagship show as well, is there's quite a few people who are angry. We've kind of talked about the reaction that the North Stand gave the players at full time. There are quite a few people who are keen that we don't let this moment become a normal or be kind of be glossed over because it's little old Ipswich and we expect it to kind of go down after Hurst was sacked and Lambert came in. This club hasn't been in the third tier in 62 years. And I think there's a view, and I sympathise with it, though we've talked before about negatives leading to negatives, that actually we need to, Evans particularly needs to acknowledge that this is not acceptable. This situation for this football club, no one's demanding Premier League, no one's demanding top six championship, but they are demanding that we are keeping an even keel and are not, you know, milling it around with, let's be honest, with small clubs that, you know, have never achieved anything, and therefore we should probably, it's a difficult one to phrase, Harry, because we've talked about this before, and I'm a similar school of thought to you that I don't get angry or depressed too readily, but we are playing League One football next season, and we should not dismiss that as a really depressing situation, a state of affairs that we've got ourselves into, and people should be held accountable or be culpable for that.
Yeah,
the problem being it's the owner, and you can't just kick the owner out. But at least he came out and apologised, I guess. But probably not enough for some.
I know. I think we're both quite similar. I'm viewing it with sadness rather than anger. As I say, watching Sir Bobby, you know, I thought, well, a consolation rather than retribution was kind of more the kind of my mood over the weekend. Really, it's I think people though there have been a number of classic missteps. We've talked about this before, and I don't want to turn it into an Evans bashing rant, but it is,
save that till May.
You know, save it till May. But it is the truth that we have gone through well managed decline, but decline nonetheless. It's no matter how stable it has been, you know, it's like a ship serenely sinking kind of thing, you could argue. But to what extent? You can't focus it on the players. We said this last week. Yep. They're the innocent bystanders. They were sold utterly short by what happened last summer.
Agreed.
And there has been a pattern in the last decade of some catastrophic transfer windows. So in that sense, we know the evidence. It's there. So in a way, rather, you know, it's not in my nature to get, maybe Roy Keane was right, a protest in Ipswich is four or five people sort of, you know, sort of with one banner, you know, maybe that's just the nature of the club that we are. But I can't see anger achieving anything. It doesn't get rid of manager, it doesn't get rid of owners, I should say. It never does. But just as equally, if this starts to go wrong next season, if Evans has another bad summer, I think most of us will just quietly write him off, and that's when the anger may well appear.
But, and it will be justified, I think, if it's a level below and we're still stagnating.
Yeah.
But
it's not overnight. It's been happening. You know, we've seen this pattern for a decade. It hasn't been all catastrophic decisions, but there have been moments where there have been epic misjudgments. That's the best way to describe it.
And I think I read someone say, I think it was in the 200, it might have been Susan actually who wrote that, that there's a kind of relegation of 1,000 cuts or whatever, isn't it? You know, slowly, I wrote a piece for a Preston fanzine that I'll tweet to when that comes out. We've talked about these sliding doors moments before, but it just, there's, when you look back in hindsight, certain things that happened, it feels like there's been this inexorable decline or slide to where we are, that maybe the majority of people are just not surprised that we are where we are. They were hoping we wouldn't, but actually there's a grudging acceptance that you buy League One players, you have League One budgets, you end up in League One. You know, it's not rocket science.
Well, we talked about this. I remember Ian Mill doing, and to be fair to Phil Ham from TWTD, was it the season before last? The discussion of funding came up as an issue, and what we were the fear was that the model we were using was enhancing the risk factor. Let's put it that way. So therefore, we weren't giving ourselves any room for manoeuvre if things went wrong, and things could not have gone worse. Really,
So as long as we learn our mistakes, I think that is the key. Let's briefly talk about season tickets. We can come back and talk about it maybe on the next one, but it certainly will come up on the flagship.
Oh, it's come up this week. Yeah, it's great.
The season ticket price is coming out. I think it's 12.5% reduction, which is in the right direction, 15% for families. And then this kind of town targets thing where the more people who get a season ticket, the bigger the percentage decrease on cost and refunds and all that kind of stuff. right direction for you? Not far enough? Thoughts?
No. I think it's about right. Given the fact that that income is proportionally more important, we're now moving away from a Leicester City funding model and more towards a Bath City funding model, if I can put it like that, in the sense that that match day income is vital. So they can't, we don't want to cut our own noses off to spite our face. I think they've got it about right, actually. I think they've it's brilliant. One small side factor I'd lob in is the fact that a lot of people might be motivated to get season tickets because a lot of away ends next season will be very small. The Brentford factor.
Harry, spoilers. We shouldn't be giving away the secrets, you know.
Sorry, it's exactly that. No, but just think, remember last year, in our good years, I should say, Brentford away suddenly became an issue. How can we get a ticket? There are some small away grounds out there, and I can see people thinking, it's only...
I hadn't thought that, though. Yeah. I mean, it's a great 500 seats
away. Wickham away kind of thing. Yeah. That's a very doable game from Ipswich. You're thinking, God, how can we get, how can we guarantee ourselves getting a seat there? So in that sense...
I've made the mistake of saying seats. Maybe it's a standing position in the terrace
football.
Welcome
to the
League One, everyone. Living,
indeed. Yep.
I think it's positive.
But I think it's very positive. They've thought it through cleverly. They've taken good... They've listened to everybody. They've listened to Paul Lambert as well. They haven't... But the fear would have been that they'd have tried to finagle it so that there was to have a lesser discount, but you've got to, it's a balancing act. But they really do need that income next year.
And a freeze for if we come up to the Championship as well, which is a good thing as well. I thought they could probably do something about merchandise in Planet Blue and get us spending more, a permanent discount for season ticket holders or something like that. But I'm going to put my money where my mouth is, and I will be getting a season ticket for the first time in I think it's three years, a couple of seasons. So I will be back there as much as I can be next season. I'll be trying to support as much as I can. Let's bring it up to date in terms of Preston, who are our next opponents. I've, as always now, Harry, I take my role very seriously because you do all the heavy lifting here. I thought I would contribute some stats.
Okay.
Because I've done some research.
Good.
We had a pretty decent record against Preston. I don't think we've lost in the league since 2010. And we lost them in FA Cup tie, obviously, January 2014. But we've had a pretty decent record against Preston. And in the early noughties, it was a pretty dour run, actually. I remember under Joe Royal that we rarely won away at Preston, certainly. I think I remember a one or draw maybe on Friday night. But there was a 20-year gap between January 1980 and September 2002 where we didn't play Preston at all. We haven't got a huge amount of a record to go on. I've got the shirts that are behind me from the noughties, actually. The record we've got of late, so we beat them last season with Mustafa Carriol's George Weah-esque goal before he was substituted at half time.
The sun came out from behind the clouds briefly. Absolutely.
That
was unplayable.
Super unplayable. Nick kind of smash and grab. And before that, a game that I went to, actually, Tom Lawrence scored a fantastic goal, cut in a 1-0 draw. So of late, we've got a pretty decent record against Preston. Earlier in the season, the 1-0 draw, Paul Lambert's first game. Plenty of incident in that one. And if we get on to talk about Paul Gallagher, we can remind ourselves that he can play in multiple positions, including in between the posts. And a busy week for Preston as well. I mean, we'll come on to their kind of form. The playoffs is probably not going to happen now. But the big story this week is Alex Neil committing his future, despite interest from West Brom, their last opponents, which was obviously a fairly awkward game. It has also been a distraction. Four defeats in a row. No surprise that there's injuries that have played a part there, suspensions to key players. But Alex Neil staying has presumably gone down quite well.
Yeah, they love it. They're really happy. He suits the kind of the long term. In a way, there are similarities between us and them. You could Sheffield United as well. Ben and I talked about the progressives at the beginning of the season, teams who don't spend a lot of money, but through good judgment and patient incremental improvement, just move their way slowly up the table. And Preston are a classic example of that. Neil fits in with that long-term model of play. He has a style of play. They love it. They were really worried about him going to West Brom, and there was such a they felt that they were badly beaten. It was 4-1, it was 4-0, and it was a consolation goal, Dwight Gale hat-trick. But they they were felt that it was a very distracted performance last week because it was all up in the air. He could have gone to West Brom because they're obviously with Darren Moore gone. They haven't actually firmed up a vacancy there. They do compare him to Chris Wilder. They definitely say that. Steadily putting together a good playing squad. The key word there is steadily, I think. It's that, you know, just, you know, as I say, small victories every season. And they say hopefully he'll add the missing links during the summer. We'll come on and talk about those.
We've talked about injuries before, though, with Preston, haven't we? And it will be a factor. You know, there's some really key players that we can strike through talking about today. But I just go back to that game. We beat them 2-0, was it, last season? Waghorn and Selina, I think. Maybe 3-0, actually, I think it was. And it was just before the international break. And their squad was decimated with injuries, wasn't it? Is that down to the style injuries of play, do you think?
Yeah, spot on. It's they play, I call it Braveheart football. It really is that kind of whirligig, in your face, whirling dervishes. You know, this kind of, Brentford started playing it when they first came up, actually, under Warburton. It's a version of that where they just, you know, it's high octane stuff, hammering into tackles. Last year, I don't know what it's like this year, but last year they had overwhelmingly the worst disciplinary record in the league.
It probably down to one player, right? He's suspended for Friday.
It's really funny. But they it's hilarious. But that's the way they play. And of course, when you get to a 40-game, the end of a 40-game season, you know, you're looking at who's last man standing almost. It's like a demolition derby, they go about
looking
it.
Looking here, Ben Pearson is the one who's suspended. Yeah. I highly rate, actually, Pearson. I quite like him. 14 yellow cards this season. I think he's suspended for a red card, isn't he?
He is.
I'm also looking elsewhere. Darnell Fisher, who's the fullback, he's got 11 yellow cards. And to be fair, those are the outliers. But they don't take any prisoners, do they?
I think it's softened compared to last year. But I mean, Pearson, I even put a bit in him on the TWTD piece because they're doing their nut with him. He's a really good midfielder. He's one of the two who sits in front of the back four, but a deep line playmaker. That's the way they do it. And he was sent off for hauling back Patrick Bamford against Leeds, which was 2 games ago. So this is the second game he's out. But the previous week he got a yellow card against Sheffield United. And from what I read on the forum in the match day thread, he got it for complaining to the referee for a free kick that Preston had been awarded. I may have got that wrong, but I remember thinking, wow, get a grip, mate. He drives them. He really does drive them out. They said there's no point in having him if he's sitting in the stand for 25% of the season. They said it's useless. Oh,
is it
dear.
10 matches I think he's missed through suspensions. I think I read that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's crazy. And he's a really important player for them, isn't he?
He is vital, actually. He really is. But I mean, the season has taken its toll on them. The 4 defeats. I mean, a month ago, they were 7th on goal difference behind Aston Villa. They were on the same points as Villa. 4 straight defeats. Reading, and then they've lost to Sheffield United, Leeds, West Brom. 3 teams, obviously, all guns blazing. And that's seen them now fall away. They're 12th, solidly mid-table. One of them said, all together now, there's always next season. You know, that's how they summed it up. So a lot of it is down to tiredness. One of them said the gas tank is empty and they've got 360 minutes, I should say, of running on fumes awaiting. And they said they can't fault the players' efforts, but injuries have ruined it, is how they've put it. You know, it's this high intensity football. They just can't keep it up. But in overall terms, they're seeing the campaign in a very positive light, given the relative lack of money and given when you look at the teams that they're trading with, you know, you've got Swansea, Stoke, not a million miles away from them. The fact that they can compete with them, you know, they do take consolation from that. Yeah,
well, it's the model that we should have arguably been following. But we've got a really good question from Ben, actually, which compares the approach from Evans and, is it Trevor Hemmings, I think, is their Preston owner.
That's the honour. That's right.
We'll come back and maybe talk to that at the end. Should we go through the squad? I had a similar thought that it's similar to Birmingham City in that there's probably a core 14 or 15 players that mostly start, but I think it's probably worth us caveating, and I'll do this on your behalf because I know you'd never be so bold as to say that we possibly don't know what's going to happen. Easter weekend, hectic fixture schedule, there's likely to be a bit of rotation, and again, as we've talked about before, we're lowly relegated Ipswich, so there might be some surprise inclusions from young players and all that kind of stuff on Friday, but we'll do our best. We'll talk about the ever-presence and the ones we know about. Should we start in goal?
Yeah.
And work our way forward. I just want to call out in nets for Preston at Portman Road was Maxwell, who got sent off. He came out and rugby tackled, was it Jordan Roberts, I think?
I think it was,
Or, Freddie Sears, I forget. Or was clipped, didn't he? I forget. Either way, he went adventuring out of his penalty area, and I think we called that out in the previous show last time. He's now on loan to Charlton, so that he obviously didn't last too long after that. They signed the Accrington Stanley goalkeeper who played against us in the cup tie, but I don't think he's played too many games.
No, he hasn't.
It's ex-Norwich goalkeeper Rudd that is the number one at the moment.
Yeah, interesting. They've had nothing to say about him, and I looked really hard, but Michael Crowe was on the bench.
And I think he's played a game for them as well. I think he's made one appearance,
But it's just great to see. I saw him a good number of times for the underage teams, and I've always rated him. That's one I don't understand why we let him go.
Joe was pretty surprised by that, and Harry Wright kind of being kept on because Harry's very diminutive, isn't he? And Michael Crowe was in the Wales under 21s.
Yeah, he was. Yes, right, he was. Yeah, he's he's played representative in international football underage. But Rudd though is an interesting one. They praised him in a way because they really had a bad day at the office against West Brom, and he kept the score down. They said if it wasn't for him, it was a 7-1 drubbing. Mm. The big theme from that West Brom game though, and if you see the highlights, they were watching. It was a bit like what happened when they came to Portman Road. West Brom, three or four moments of absolute quality unlocked the press defence. And it's Gael on fire, Rodriguez on fire, really good quality balls played into them. You just kind of, this is all about the money. It really was. They just couldn't live with them. It happens in the Championship, as we know. Yeah, Rudd generally is liked. There is a big amber light. Good on one-to-ones, very good at anticipating it, reading of through balls, etc. But there's a big flashing amber light on set pieces, just to flag it up. He hardly comes off his line to command his area, makes us vulnerable at corners and set pieces. And they said every team we play puts two or three players around him on corners. So it's one of those things to watch out for you if you're at the game. Just if you see it's a bit like the old Sabutio thing where you put all your players in your 6-yard box, just you're 1-0 up against somebody good, and you're playing this sort of heroic defending. But it's that type of thing in inverse where you've got if you see Lambert sort of dropping about three or four in around him, just kind of Chambo kind of bumping his elbow into his back or whatever.
People were doing it to Gherkin, weren't they?
Yeah. Exactly. So, that. Yeah. We had that exactly. They were literally just, almost playing, spearing it into the goal. Rudd, there is an amber light on that with him. Interestingly, the rest of the defence, so the two centre-backs, they have improved. When we played them earlier in the season, they had a really woeful defensive record.
They were really slow as well. So it was Clark, Huntington, Davies and Earl in the back four against us.
Yeah.
Fisher, players that have come in recently.
Yeah, they have overhauled, particularly the centre backs. Tom Clark isn't even in the squad. He wasn't last week anyway. Paul Huntington is the backup now. Huntington, I mentioned him very briefly. If you want to give your defence some more steel, the solution is Huntington. But he's going backwards now. He's probably regressed to.
He's going down, isn't he?
He's slowing down. He was always very good for them in set pieces, but they've said they've watched his decline. It's his fourth season, I think, in the Championship. He came up with them. His ex at Yeovil, I think, he played for Leeds as well for a while. But he's kind of there's been a slow decline with him over the seasons, very much the bench option. But the two they've got are quite young, actually. Jordan Story and Ben Davis. Davis is the one they do like. He's 23-year-old youth product, and he's grown into the season. Long way off the finished article. He's very good at reading the ball. He's very comfortable with the ball at his feet. Very assured, terrific in the air. He has cost them some direct goals with lapses of concentration. That's the thing you've got to watch out for. But they're hoping that will pass with experience.
23 is no age for a centre back, isn't it?
It's not, yeah. But he's the senior partner of the two. The other one is Jordan Story. As I say, they're very much a work in progress. The other issue with them was, whereas with Huntington particularly and Clark, the ball would generally get launched, if I can put it like that. Under Story and Davis, they are more footballing centre-backs. Story, as I say again, he came from Exeter City, actually. That was his background.
They've been raiding Exeter, have they?
Yeah, oh, yes, they have.
More with him, and him. LA.
Yeah, they come on, as I say, further up the field as well. A brilliant prospect, Story, but has a lot to learn. And this is a nice phrase. They said there's a difference between being good on the ball and being comfortable on the ball. And they said that while he's comfortable on the ball, he can be jittery. He can be error prone. So he's naturally good, comfortable in possession, but not always alert, not always reading danger. He could move the ball a bit more quickly. So it's almost like he's Adam Webster a few years ago.
Okay. He needs to figure it out.
And he needs to figure it out.
He was a recent signing, was he, this season?
Yeah, he was. He came into them from, he joined last June, and he was very much a fringe player. But as the season has gone on, and as Huntingdon and Clark have declined, these two have come in. Yeah. Fisher, we've talked about briefly on the fullbacks. He's right back. He gets
just from booking
the video record. Exactly, he gets stuck in. We have evidence. He had a really bad game. And the first of their run of defeats, they lost to Reading, and their quick wingers gave him an absolutely tough time. As I say, he's a right back. He's had a shocking couple of months at the start of the season, hence the poor defensive record. But that has him. He has grown into the season, they've said, and he is also very positive going forward. So he is a good attacking fullback in that sense. And one other thing to watch out for, in that they've lost Joey Garner now for doing this, but one of them mentioned his time wasting diving and all the other dark arts are very entertaining. If he was on the opposite team, I would loathe the guy. That also might explain some of the yellow cards. But they say he's turned a corner and he's playing well. Right back, as I say, not an issue. Left back, however, is yet another sort of ropey left back. Fisher came from Rotherham, just to say it as a side point. But Josh Earle, 20-year-old youth product in at left back. When you see the word alas, it's never good.
Alas,
Josh Earle, despite being totally committed and enthusiastic, isn't a fullback. And his lack of haste on and off the ball completely nullifies our left-sided threat all day long. He's got a rick in him, this player. Against West Brom last week, he played one infield ball, and it reminded me of the one that was played infield against Queen's Park Rangers on Boxing Day. He played it straight into a West Brom player three passes later the goal, just outside the Preston penalty area. And you saw him afterwards walking along with his head up over his shirt up over his head. It's really bad. And then, what happened then was he lost confidence because this sums him up again. He's still learning his trade. At times he gets into great positions to play a decent forward ball, but second guesses himself and plays it safe.
Right.
So they think he's really good. There's a prospect. He's tall. He's athletic. He's got a lot going for him. He had, and also Ben will love this. He was ripped to shreds by Hernandez, who hasn't been.
Join the queue. Yeah.
Anyway, but they think he will ultimately get there. And he doesn't. He also plays with his head held high. He's got a great mentality. So he never goes hiding, to be fair to him. So, but they feel they need to be patient with him. So, but he's basically a decent left back who's got a rick in him. I'll mention one other quick fullback before a fullback quickly. Joe Rafferty. Now they've brought him in.
Is he a quick mention or is he quick?
No, he's not quick. They don't know much about him actually. He came from Rochdale, January signing, but he's played over 200 times for Rochdale. He's another right back, which they think that he's actually made Darnell Fisher more honest by having a good. All they can say about him at the moment is that he's tidy. And they like what they've seen. He's very composed, but he's very experienced, but just at a lower league level. But they're hoping, they said hopefully he can get some game time towards the end of the season and along come Ipswich. So watch out for him. He might be at right back instead of Fisher. So that's the back line anyway. It's as I say, Josh Earle and Rudd look to me to be, if we're going to get anything out of there, they'll be the two. Yeah.
In terms of moving forward then, the holding midfield, is it a 4-2-3-1, do we think? I think West Brom, they might have done the 4-1-4-1, which hasn't worked, so that will probably revert back to 4-2-3-1, won't it?
Yeah,
can tick Pearson off. Listen back to the preview show from November, because we probably waxed lyrical about Pearson. But it's Johnson playing back there, and
yeah, he is. Yeah, Ryan Letson. It'll be those two, I think, possibly, depending on how fit Gallagher is. The Preston midfield, they play a three, but there's all sorts of different threes you can play in midfield. We before we recorded, Rich and I were talking about the way Steeperman, even though he plays as a number 10 for Norwich, he actually doesn't play. He's not a locksmith. He's not a Juan Mata type who will unpick a defence. He bombs through and creates spaces for the wide players to bomb in, or a midfielder to come forward and attack. He's that type of
Major
more
the penalty area.
Exactly. Yeah. Alan Brown, who is their kind of more advanced midfielder,
top scorer, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. That's what he does. He said that he's very he's highly energetic. He never stops running. but he's not technically creative, but again, he typifies the industry and energy of the team. My lovely quote on him was, one of them said he has more stamina than a filibustering Tory, which I thought was a political reference there. They say he has become a good number 10. They'd be 10 points worth off without his goals. Don't take him for granted. It's easy to look down on him because he isn't one of these kind of, he can't come up with these lovely fantasy passes at all. But they feel, though, he does need more creative partners to be more effective. Otherwise, he will give the ball away or go missing. So he needs a creator playing. Some of them think they need the creator playing the role instead of him. They think he struggles in a deeper role because his tackling and his dictating play in that central, in a deeper role, isn't there. He's not a playmaker. So the best way to use him is as a second striker, almost, to kind of bomb in, hassle defences, break things up, and hopefully link with one of the strikers or one of the wide players.
Presumably that's why Johnson's been sitting.
Yeah.
Because I probably said this in November, but I'm going to say it again because I'm forgetful. Mm. I always thought he was a forward or a winger. So presumably he's there because they want to break forward. He's there to lead the charge forward.
Yeah, when they played a more counter-attacking game under Simon Grayson, he was the perfect number 10 because that's what he would do. He said, bang, when the goal they scored against us in the game Ryan Fraser scored our goal, the great goal he scored for us, it was a very quick counter-attack off a town set piece. And if I'm not mistaken, Johnson was the one who was up the field. He played the ball backwards and then spun. He was the focal point. He was the linchpin for any counter-attacking moves. But not in this system. The idea is that he should be a deep lying playmaker. One of them said that both him and Pearson missed the West Brom game for different reasons. Pearson was suspended and Johnson was on the field. They said they hope he enjoyed the Leeds game. He spent most of the time watching it as well. Games are passing him by and they don't think he's suited necessarily to that role. Well, they are pretty... He's only 26, so he's not the height of his career. It's not age or anything. They think it's that old cliche luxury player. He gives them form forward movement with his passing from deep, but they feel he is a bit of a luxury who needs moving on. His passing is ineffective. He's typically poor pass straight into touch. That's come up so often. The word inconsistent has come up as well. And in many ways, that's been that the midfield again is part of their problem, because if you have a player who cannot thread a good ball through, then you're relying on playing direct football. And when we come on and talk about the strikers, if you're playing direct football, you don't want Sean Maguire as a striker. So the whole thing isn't working. If Johnson isn't working, it diminishes the impact that the guy at the other end of the field has. So, but he will play because it's just presumably due to lack of numbers. And they don't really have, there aren't any real youth prospects that I can see.
Josh Gnealy is the one, or...
Keneally, but he's a wide player.
Is he a wide player? Okay.
I think he's a wide player. That's what they were saying. They expect him to come in possibly on one of the flanks. Ledson, meanwhile, he's another 21-year-old ex Oxford United, and he has he's started a couple of games recently. He's been rotated in. He came in May of last year, so it was a summer signing. They say he's worse on the ball than Johnson, and he's much slower, but he recovers the ball well. He seems to be more like a net and out sitter.
Proper sitter, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, he has plenty of bite and stops very good opposition midfield dictating things. And the other thing they said about him was he doesn't hide. He was the only outfield player to show any real desire at West Brom. He played well against Sheffield United, but then he didn't play against Leeds, and the fans felt that they surrendered without him. He wasn't in there. But he's very much a breakthrough season for him. Next year, they could see him becoming... progressing into the team on a more regular basis, but he's not the playmaker. He would be a Pearson replacement rather than a Pearson partner, unless you're playing a team where you need to really screen the back four. But as I said, the centre backs are also growing. You can see the sense of progress with them. You really can. Yeah, but
talk through the wide midfielders, because there's one that I know that you're quite keen to talk about, who I think we mentioned in passing, Nemecha. And Paul Gallagher is a bit of a stalwart there now, isn't he?
Yeah.
And obviously the hero of the Portman Road match with the penalty scored and then saves from Danny Rowe and anyone else when he went in goal because Maxwell was sent off. Where would you start, Nemecha?
We start with Gallagher because he may play in a midfield role. They have switched him in there. He's 34. He doesn't have the legs he had before, and he came off against West Brom with a shin injury on 42 minutes. He was withdrawn. I think Robinson replaced him, but he's But the great thing with him is quality on the ball. They say without him, there's no focus in the team. And in a way, if anything, he would replace Daniel Johnson as a deep line playmaker.
He scored a free kick, didn't he? Sorry, not a penalty. I'm trying to remember the
passing. It was a free kick. No, it was a free kick. It was. You're right. Yeah, yeah, it was a free kick. But he, if you can't deliver the ball as well as him, then you have to be more inventive rather than trying the same thing over again. Without him, the habit of going long kicks in, which is what they noticed. They've said that there's a lack of focus in the team, but that they feel he's maturing into a possible deeper midfielder going into his 30s. Excellent technical ability, as you say, the set pieces. He can give them a creative edge with his vision and passing ability. So it's an interesting one. But they said as well, if he starts the game poorly, you might as well take him off. It's just his age, I think. Yeah. He's a really good player, but he may well start instead of Johnson. He could be as well if they're playing a lot of young kids out on the. And if they try, you know, he could be the one to
focal point for them. If,
yeah, he's sort of a wise old head out on the field, so he may well appear. But so he could play wide. I doubt. Don't know if he has the legs to, but certainly. I think he could be a central midfield option. Unlike, again, there aren't many players. As I say, Nemecha, Callum Robinson, and then this guy, Josh Ginnelly, or Ginnelly.
I think it's Ginnelly. I added an extra E just for creative effect.
But Nemecha, Man City loanee, right winger, 20. He's grown into the season. Again, like all wingers, he will divide opinion. And he isn't a finisher. They're not convinced about him playing up front. He has some games where he blows hot and cold, runs his socks off, wins a lot of headers, isn't afraid to put his body on the line. But a bit like Jack McHoma last week, he can fade in games. They say sometimes he can fade and then come back as well. He's that type of player.
The second window, or something.
Yeah, exactly that. And they think that he's better out wide because of his pace, and he does. They said Sheffield United were scared of him when he ran at them. That would have been midweek, the night we played Preston. But on his off days, or no, it would have been 2 weekends ago, forgive me, Leeds the night we played Preston. But they said on his off days, when he runs with the ball, he goes too far and often loses it with no vision for other players. He's just a 20-year-old. He's with real ability.
Sounds similar to Bersant Salina, perhaps.
Exactly. That's a really good parallel. Another Man City loanee. Again, they think they would like him to be loaned to them again next season because they feel that he's actually cut his teeth now in the Championship. They'd love to get him back to properly blossom in the team. But they're worried, obviously, that one of the more money teams with parachute payments or whatever might come and grab him. The other player is Callum Robinson. He'll be on the left, more likely.
Yeah, and we talked a lot about him last time. He was the, you know, the big name player, and has just lost a third of the season through injury, hasn't he? Four months, was it?
Yeah. He hasn't really got back from that. They said he lacks that sprightly edge and sharp arrowhead needed at this level. He's kind of running in third gear, really, I think the best way to describe it. November to February with a big, serious hamstring injury, actually. And they're worried that it's affected his confidence. They said in the Leeds game, he was backing out of challenges he could have won. He doesn't look the same player as they saw at the beginning of the season.
It's natural, though, isn't it? Really?
Yeah,
and he's still got 10 goals. He added to that against West Brom, though. I think it was probably an own goal. I think it was given as an own goal, but I think Preston fans are giving it to him. But 10 goals, he's up there with Brown, but the majority of those scored before the injury.
Yeah, there would have been.
Not all of them. Sorry.
Yeah, that's no, because they had a mad goal difference before when we went to play. They were scoring and conceding for fun.
Yeah.
But his set pieces deliveries have been poor. He's looking short of his best. He's a player. He needs a pre-season, I think, just to properly regroup. You know, but again, because of the lack of numbers, and this was said, they've no choice but to play him. He may well be rested, as I say. The other player who we mentioned, Josh Ginnelly, he had a cameo against West Brom, and again, they haven't seen him before. But you know, give him a go. The worst that can happen is he gets a taste of this level. It'll help him get ready for next season, and he's also our player.
And we're the opposition for that, aren't we? You know.
Yeah. So he was a January signing from Walsall. He was born in Coventry, worth mentioning as well. These things have to be noted. So he may well play instead of Robinson if they want to. You know, if with Easter, with lots of games on top of each other, he's another game. If not, he may well come on at half time. But you know, we are a nice team for someone to cut their teeth on.
Should we move? I'm just trying to find their fixture. Who have they got after us? Just out of interest.
I have no idea. I didn't look that up.
Check. It is Wigan away.
Oh,
So I suspect that will be considered the more important fixture, don't you?
Oh, no question. No question about that. Particularly if they can spike Wigan's guns, they wouldn't mind doing that. It's not a strange rivalry. I think Blackpool are their big.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like home comforts. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Whether you need a VPN to protect your world online, to allow you to change your worldwide location virtually, or maybe a bit of both, NordVPN gives you the freedom to do so. NordVPN also allows you to stream TV shows, films, and even sporting events which aren't available in your local region, changing to a country which is showing that content, meaning you can switch as seamlessly as a Kira McKenna in-game tactical tweak with just one click. But that's not all. NordVPN can also look after you while online, preventing your card details and passwords from falling into the wrong hands, safeguarding your personal and sensitive information from harm. Think of it as a cyber Sam Morsey, offering protection to your own personal back four, but with far fewer yellow cards. NordVPN is available for the price of a cup of Bovril per month, and one account can be used across six different devices. Visit nordvpn.com/Blue Monday or click the link in the podcast description for more information about the offer and a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee trial period. You'll also be helping out the pod by subscribing.
I think Blackpool are the big rivals.
Blackburn as well.
Blackburn to some degree, though. Blackburn Burnley, I think, is the big
took
one.
Took a
that
load
way.
To Ewood Park, yeah. I remember. Yeah.
They did, yeah. But Wigan, I think, because Wigan are, you know, they were non-league for so long. It's kind of a new rivalry that's come up. But with Wigan in trouble, they might well enjoy going over and tripping them up. The three strikers then, and this is fascinating because Barry, listening to what we've already talked about, it does have an impact on who and how you play. Neil has mostly been leading off with Sean Maguire. And what Sean Maguire gives you is mobility. He's clever movement. He can create spaces. But he is not a player who can hold the ball.
Three goals, Harry.
Yeah, yeah. He's really struggled. He's excellent. He's a Republic of Ireland international. Came over to West Ham for a couple of seasons. Didn't play for them. But he's Waterford, Dundalk, Cork City. That's very much his background. One of them said he almost looks non-league when he plays with his back to goal. I feel genuinely sorry for him as he can't hold the ball up and we create nothing. So if you haven't got Gallagher or if you have Johnson who's misfiring or there aren't any balls being played in for him to run onto, which is what he needs, if you're playing him as a target man, forget it. It doesn't stick. And when they played him against Leeds and Sheffield United as a target man, and it was a disaster because, of course, he loses the ball and the last two teams you want to keep giving the ball away easily to are Leeds and Sheffield United because it was just like the Alamo. They just kept coming back at them time and time again. Yeah. It was crazy. So they said, some of them have said they think he's a number 10 who can attack a ball with his face to goal. Some of them have said he might be better on the wing where he's got a bit more space to operate in. But he wants balls to run in. He wants balls in behind to run onto. And we don't play that way. So why play him? It's quite hard. And the player many of them want to see play, and he did start against West Brom, is Jaden Stockley. The great...
Who had this kind of infamous release clause. Yep. For Exeter, 750k, I think it was. Was it 16 goals in 25 appearances, I think he got for them.
That's
and,
right, yeah.
I think he's also on three for them now, but very highly thought of.
Yeah, but three and not very many minutes because he has been regularly used as a bench option. Just looking in here, the last eight games, he has started two and he's come off the bench in six. That gives you an idea. So it's sub, 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 start, basically, is the way they've used him. But for goals per minute ratio, one of them said, I haven't fact checked this, but they said he scored more goals than anyone else in English football in 2018. I think he was tearing it up in the lower leagues. And he'd score, and they, again, I'm not sure how accurate this is, but one of them said when he signed him, we signed him in January, he scored more headed goals than anyone in Europe this season, which is, that's a fairly big statement.
I wonder what his XG is, Harry.
But, exactly, that's, but obviously, let's just say he's good in the air. Anyway, but what they say about him, he's got physical, one of them said, this is always a lovely verb to see, it's the last 20 minutes, is it time to unleash Jaden Stockley? When you hear the word unleash, you know something's coming. Gives him something to aim at with crosses and decent chest downs and headers. Classy target man. He looks good in the box, but yet again, it's the Chris Martin thing. We need to have mobile runners around him. They need to close to feed off him, as it were. So if you're going to play him, you've got to get your players up the field.
Robinson. Yeah.
Exactly. They've got to be in there to work off him. He doesn't have the pace or the movement of Maguire, but he has got physical strength. They say he makes his physical strength presence felt in defence, but his touch isn't as good. His touch lets him down. As I say, you never get the perfect striker at this level. Otherwise, they go up. They're in the Premier League, or they're Dwight Gayle or somebody different. But it's but Stockley and Maguire, between them, you've got two contrasting players, both dependent on what they're getting from everybody else. Quick line on Louis Molt. Ex-Motherwell, and please, Mr. Neil, can I beg for just one request? Don't play Molt again this season. He did nothing as usual other than G up the crowd when coming on. Other than a nice guy, I don't know what people like about him. He's never looked comfortable against championship defences. I don't know what his goals, his scoring record's like. He's got five. Fair enough. He shows fight and heart, but his touch is poor and he constantly gives the ball away. So, quality question. He's a strong and willing attitude. He always tries to get things going, but he really would be the third choice in the system. So as I say, that's pretty much who they have. As I say, expect 4-2-3-1. It'll be interesting to see which of the reserves come in and how they configure the midfield, whether Johnson or whether, if Gallagher is fit, whether he comes back in again. But I think whether Stockley or Maguire plays will give us an idea what to expect. But don't be surprised if there are more fringe players than we've even mentioned who simply haven't, there could be some strange names coming off the bench who we don't know.
Oh, great stuff, Harry, that's brilliant. And the longer the pod goes on, the more I recall the game in November. And I think I said at the start, Maxwell got a straight red. I think he got a second yellow, which you don't see keepers get too often.
I think it was a pretty stupid
out of the penalty area challenge twice, I think. I think he got caught out of his penalty area twice.
That's what they were hammering him for. That he was, he had these rushes of blood that he would,
I wonder if he's playing for Charlton. I didn't know that up. Fantastic stuff, Harry. That's really brilliant as always. Should we do Daryl's combined 11?
Yep, interesting
with a,
one.
With a last minute addition. Yeah, I think will make everyone excited.
It will indeed.
So the goalkeepers, we've got an issue, I think. We found a goalkeeper, but there is a mitigating circumstance there. So Richard Wright is in net. Richard Wright never played for Preston. Richard Wright signed for them in the summer, I think, of 2012, having left us, I think. Was there for a week of pre-season. It clearly rained all week or was freezing bloody cold. he asked for them to rip up his contract. And a week later, he signed for Manchester City. Just down the road, without playing a single match.
Homesickness, wasn't it?
I think it was. Obviously, homesickness / you're not paying me enough. Plus, I might be on the bench in the Champions League. Good on. He was a good servant for us. Less of a good servant for Preston fans.
Preston, they don't remember him fondly. In fact, they probably don't remember him at all. Because I was laughing when you spotted that before we came on, before we started recording. Because of course, Joey Garner went back up to Wigan from Ipswich because he was also feeling very homesick. So maybe there's something. I don't know. Who knows? There's something between Suffolk and Lancashire that we don't know about.
It's the Midlands, Harry, and I can tell you, it's grim. Harry, is it a 3-4-3 formation?
It's a 3-4-3. That's basically, we've got the subs bench is slightly heavy on strikers, to say the least, in that we have six strikers, nobody else. So we've only got three defenders and we've only got four midfielders.
Decent,
It's a nice back three because you've got Sean St. Ledger, who played for them for about 5 years, of course. That was where he really established himself. I put Wayne Brown in the middle of the back three. Would that be about right?
McEvely on the left.
McEvilly on the left. That's what he was, more left sided,
yeah,
and he played for. He was a loanee with Preston in 2008. I think towards the end of his career, if I'm not mistaken, from Derby. Mm. But
four's not too bad either. Just looking through it.
Yeah, I'd play Samulikowski. I'd put him as a holder, probably sitting, because he played for. He went from us to them. He had one season. Good. For both. Was it Blackpool he scored against?
That one off the bar.
Yeah.
The Thunderbast did almost.
That's the one I remember. That's it's one of those.
I'll have to dig out the DVD, Harry.
Yeah. It's often the case when somebody just scores one goal, the goal is always usually epically memorable. And I don't know, on which note, actually, I put him on the right side, because we've no natural right-sided player, but I put Chaplow on the right.
Oh, Richard Chaplow. He scored
one goal also. I mean, he may have scored more than one for us, actually, but there is one goal that is epically memorable. And I don't know if Stats listening to this, but I was thinking, because when it came up, there was a happy Richard Chaplow day, and I was wondering whether there's some way we could actually do some sort of a Saints type calendar of certain days of certain players throughout the year. Cult heroes. And if something happened on that day that kind of just gave them a sort of an Ipswich Town degree of immortality.
I love that.
I love the idea. But certainly, because when Chaplow came along, I think Stan even did it on his Twitter feed. He said, "Happy Richard Chaplow Day," and I just thought, "Oh, it would be great to have a calendar of them over the year." Stat probably won't thank me for saying that, but I think he'd be the perfect one. Yeah, be brilliant. The other midfielder then, who I didn't realise he played for Preston, was Tommy Miller.
Yeah, that rings a bell.
It does ring a bell. He was obviously.
But I'm going to fact check it as you go. Do you want to keep going, Harry? And I'll.
That's good. Yeah, no, that's good. Because he played. I think he. Well, obviously, he was with us.
Was
twice,
it on loan from Sunderland?
I think it was something like that. He was in between being with us. I think he went to Sunderland, and then whatever reason it didn't work
correct.
Out.
Correct. He had a 7-game loan spell 2006, yeah. And then came back to us.
Came back to us. And on the left, then we have Ben Pringle, and of course we. We talked about him before. He looked everything, the hair, the, you know, there was something about him that just looked a bit of a, he looked like a bit of a Maserati kind of winger. And we have him on the left, but he went from us to Preston. No, get it wrong. No, he did. No, that's right. Mm. He was with us on loan from Fulham, and then he went to Preston for 3 years, and he really did nothing there. He turned out to be a bit of a mirage of a winger, which was interesting. Yeah. So that's, as I say, Chaplow on one side, Pringle on the other, Miller, and then Samulikowski prowling behind, sort of screening the back four. Back three, I should say. That works quite well. Now, things get lively up front. Do you want to lead off on this?
Yeah so, well, we've got Alex Mathey.
Yeah.
And we've...
that's really good.
David Johnson, Mark 1. And the late addition to the squad, good on Daryl for doing the research on this.
This is a brilliant
spot, this. Four-game loan spell from Bristol City. One, Marcus Stewart made the journey up to Preston.
Yeah.
So he makes our team. But on the bench, Harry, I mean, we mentioned Garner. The other big name from Preston fans will be David Healy.
Of course.
And Ricardo Fuller, actually, to a lesser extent. But there's some really chuggy kind of mid-noughties players that had pretty lousy spells with us that probably Preston fans remember more favourably. Ebanks, Blake, Nathan Ellington. John Macken, I remember, who had that disallowed goal against Cole U.
That's right, he was a Palace loanee, wasn't he? That's right,
Who else? The bench is all strikers, isn't it?
Yeah, and of course, don't forget, when Stewart was brought in, we defenestrated Tamás Priskin.
Because
he played on loan for them for Watford before coming across to us. So, as I say, some of those names, some of you remember more fondly than others, I think it's fair to say. It's a good starting 11, Daryl. Thank you.
Nice one, Daryl. Thank you.
Great stuff. Thank you.
Let's quickly do some questions. As I say, we're going to share the questions 50-50 between this show and tomorrow. We've got some questions about food, quite a lot of, so I'll split those in two. I don't know what it is, Harry.
I was wondering, is it something to do with Lent? Because people have obviously, there's some subliminal food thing. People have given up wine, or they've given up fruit, or they've given up Indian side orders. Because people have been asking us for our favorite culinary options. I mean, we're not experts, but it's all part of the service. We'll do our best.
We'll come up with the most highbrow answers we can, Harry.
We'll do what we can.
And maybe it's, I need to check when people post their questions. Maybe it's around midday or something like that.
It could be. It's the equivalent of going into the supermarket when you're hungry and you end up buying a
don't
stuff
do that. You just buy mini eggs. Yeah.
Exactly. It's never wise.
A question from Ben, actually, which is a really good compliment for the stuff we talked about from Preston, and we mentioned it before. Is there a parallel between Marcus Evans and Trevor Hemmings, the Preston North End owner? Both try to fund the gap between themselves and parachute clubs, and some Preston fans cite a lack of ambition. Do you see Preston going the same way as Town long term, or will Hemmings and Alex Neil be able to go one step further than Evans and McCarthy? Thoughts on whether this model that we've kind of you've called kind of progressive, or at least what they're trying to do is progressive, but is there a point where it goes past its sell by date and money eventually has to be pumped in?
No, it's totally viable. I mean, you can do it in different ways. You can be progressive in, there's lots of different iterations of it almost. Where I would agree, the parallels are there in that Hemmings does fund the team to a level and he does give them stability. Look back 10 years ago, the three big hitters in Lancashire would have been Bolton, Blackburn and Blackpool. Now I'd argue that the three big hitters in Lancashire are, or the two big hitters are Preston and Burnley, and Blackburn are kind of regrouping. It's back to the old owners relegating clubs thing, but it does work. That sense of progress does definitely exist there. So there is a real parallel in that sense. He's given them stability and he's given them an appropriate level of funding. I'd also agree in that he's generally patient and he does give his managers time. So the renewal of the contract from Alex Neil, if you saw all their comments, they were all thinking, yes, this is a world that we know. You're not chucking managers every 6 weeks or every 6 months. It's very stable. Where I think it's different and where we fall down is around the whole judgment question, and we talked about this earlier. Yeah. I just think we've had some spectacularly bad moments of judgment in the last decade, and that has completely compromised what we've tried to do. There's different ways you can do it. Preston, to me, the nearest example is Sheffield United, in that it's all about stability, and it's all about just bringing the team through and just keeping it. Lots of little victories, just keeping it slow and steady and just augmenting every summer. Brentford uses the Moneyball model. It's more statistical and they buy their players that way. Whereas in contrast, we have just been way too hit and miss. Yeah. That's the problem. We've had some good moments. I think we've got a good moment now at Lambert, and I can see it all. It's becoming, it's clicking back together, and hopefully it'll work. But we've had three particularly epically bad transfer windows in the last decade that have completely undermined us.
Yeah. One thing I would cite as well, and it's not, it doesn't really answer Ben's question, which you've obviously done, is the signings that we've talked about for Preston. So we've got Story, Stockley, I think you mentioned a couple of others. Is Ledson one of them as well?
Ledson is one.
Been brought through from the lower divisions, but they've done it incrementally rather than let's buy five or six of them and stick them straight in the squad, which is exactly where we fell down. You do it gradually, you bring them in. You know, at this point of the season where you're safe,
that's brilliant.
You get them up to speed, don't you? And I think, you know, that's just common sense as well, which we appear to have been lacking in as well.
And you're not bringing them in to throw them in. I mean, exactly. Stockley has been very much used as your spot. That's brilliant. That's brilliant, Rich. Stockley, just looking at the list of players, Josh Ginnelly, he may well get a starting debut against us, even though he has already played for Walsall. Brad Potts was the other one. He came from Barnsley, and again, he's picked up injuries, but that's why he's out. He's got a knee injury, but same thing again. He hasn't been overused. He's been brought through. Joe Rafferty, I mean, over 200.
Billy Bowden as well.
Yeah, exactly. They bring them in. They don't bring them in and throw them in. They bring them in and integrate them.
Yes.
That's a brilliant spot. Whereas in contrast to last summer, where we literally just chucked them in.
Bought the whole Shrewsbury squad and played it the first day. We'll come back to some of these questions, I think. Let me pick out the ones that are specifically Preston. I don't think we've had too many, actually. We've got one on Swansea, so we'll come back to that one. Let's start with Harry Butcher's question, and make sure this answer is as highbrow as you can make it, Harry. What kind of fruit would you be?
I took a rather graphic approach. I said probably a coconut or a kiwi fruit due to the levels of hair. That was the best I could come up with. I don't know if there's anything else we'll add to that. I do have a fruit bowl out there which does regularly get eaten to stop me eating biscuits, I have to say. So I like plums. As I say, we like our good peaches, apples, all the rest of it. But no, I'm going with coconuts and kiwi fruits. I don't know about your thinking.
Well, I was going to go highbrow. was going to go lychee.
Lychee is quite possible. Oh, yeah, pomegranate. That's quite nice. Or,
pomegranate. I'm a big fan of a pomegranate. I'm a big fan of raspberry. Yeah. Sorry, raspberry is my go-to.
Persimmons are lovely when they're just right. That's another really lovely.
Consumer advice for you there, Harry. Make sure you go get your five a day. Arthur Pickthorne. If he stays fit, could Teddy Bishop be the main man in League One next season? Everyone's talking about Judge, but Bishop could have as much impact in his opinion.
Yeah. Good question. You chip in after me, Rich, on this one. Teddy Bishop is unfinished business. And I don't know if anybody else is doing this. I've been watching the Quest programmes and watching League One highlights with a more forensic eye lately. It's worth doing just to get an idea of what is this football that they play. Technical players can get more time and space for themselves. It is a more physical league, and in many ways it is more athletic. But if you're technical, you can make time and space for yourself. The big question for Teddy before he got his injuries was whether he could finish. I've seen him score. I saw that great goal he scored against Bournemouth. And we've seen his mazy runs, and we've seen flashes of what he can do. If he can add goals to his game, and I think he can, this could be really his season. And one codicil to that I'd add is that everybody's hoping that Judge will tear the league up, and that's what the wide expectation is, and he will. I think he will be a level above that league. But I have a hunch that with all the spotlight on Judge, and I'm not sure who it is, but one of our younger players is going to set that division on fire, and we don't know quite who it is yet. We can all have a guess, but I think there's somebody who's in the squad who's doing quite well, and somebody is just going to come out of the traps. That's my hope anyway. It's a sixth sense. It's just a sixth sense. But we'll
Lancaster, El Mazzuni. We've got a question about that. Let me see if I can find it. Yeah, FBL Tractor. Is it time to give El Mazzuni, Nydam and Darba or McGavin a game? I'd lob in Bailey Clements as well, who's been highly thought of. The other 23s were roundly defeated, actually, by Forest midweek. Forest, but any thoughts on any of those ones that FBL Tractor mentions there?
Yeah, I'd say yes against the right opponents. It's just a question of balance. It's a pity we have... I mean, the Preston game is perfect for this. It could be two really weird formations that we see. You just don't know. Possibly Swansea as well, because they've got nothing riding on their season. The problem with Sheffield United and Leeds is that they're going for it, which is really frustrating. So it's not going to do them any good getting mullered by Leeds or Sheffield United. But then, just as equally, you could say you don't know how good they are until you actually throw them in, and you could suddenly see somebody, you know, one of the midfielders or one of the defenders playing out of their skin up against, you know, a Hernandez or Billy Sharp or whatever. They could really cut their teeth and discover just how good they are. To me, it's a question of balance. I'd probably throw in more of them over the Easter weekend and fewer of them in the final two games.
Yeah.
But I would. But
they're
I wouldn't
not going
throw
to face no, a Sheffield United or a Leeds next season, are they?
No, they're not. It's a confidence judgment as well. Some of them might have the mentality, as I say, someone like Josh Earle, who has made mistakes. They still say, the Preston left back, that he has the character to bounce back from that. And so, you know, you just kind of just, okay, well, we're going nowhere this season, so don't worry about the mistake. We learn, you learn from it, and you move on. Yeah. Mm. We'll see. But, yeah.
A kind of follow-on question from that, Dummy Boy 79. Hey guys, looking forward to the pod. So am I. Hopefully it's good. do you think League One is a better breeding ground to launch the type of transition which we are going through? Well, I think you've kind of alluded to this at the start, Harry, about a division below. Let's clear out the cobwebs. Let's reboot, as it were. Is League One the best place for that? I mean, we don't really have a choice, do we? We're not going to stay up anymore. So,
no. All season, you'd kind of say, no, always stay in the Championship. It's such a hard league to get back into. You know, better to be here and regroup. But I was watching the Brentford game particularly, and I just thought, given how far we've regressed, I would say yes. Now, I think we do need to go down and do a proper rebuild. I say that with a heavy heart. But I think we will benefit playing against less technically able, and when I say slower, I mean slower in terms of football tempo teams, rather than running around. It's more that we'd be able to move the ball around more with greater fluency than many of our opponents. Whereas if we'd stayed up, getting pulled apart by the Brentfords of the division week in, week out won't serve us any good.
Yeah.
We've so much ground to make up, and let's hope we can do it next season. I hate to say that, but I don't know whether you'd agree or not.
And the academy players as well. I absolutely think that, because we've kind of talked about, we haven't talked about it, but youth players going out on loan, you know, you'd be sending Josh Emmanuel, Miles Kenlock, maybe Andre Dizel out to these League One clubs to get experience.
Yeah.
And actually, I know we've kind of talked about the risk that is we get kind of dominated or we get bullied by certain teams, but I think it's a really great opportunity for those players to establish themselves and become a real key fixture in the team, get that first team experience, and as kind of Domi Boy alludes to, kind of build slowly together, hopefully build to something successful next season. But if not, the season after that, a season at that level, a bit of championship time, I think a lot of those players will be much better for it. Whereas if we're in the championship and perhaps under the previous manager, we wouldn't have seen as many of them. I know he had a good record of bringing in specific players, but maybe this gives the academy the shot in the arm that it's needed over the last few years as well. Let's do one more, because we are recording this at the moment. It's 8:15 on Wednesday evening. It's Manchester City Spurs in the Champions League. My phone has gone off and I'm getting texts like "Wow" and "What a start" and "Defending anyone," and I'm worried that we're missing a 3-3 extravaganza after only 15 minutes in the Champions League. So I need to see what's going on, Harry.
Okay.
Let me do one more football one and one more food one. Craig Fim75. Given Judge is now on board, presumably he says as number 10, at what point does he get a chance to play there again? Lack of left midfielder stopping us from being able to do so if we're not playing a diamond. We need to decide on how we're playing next season and use these four games accordingly. I think Craig has raised this point before, but thoughts on Judge? He floats around, doesn't he?
It's what he did at Brentford. He was often left-sided, but then he'd suddenly drift into the middle, and whoever would be at the Sawyer's equivalent at the time would then drift out left to kind of cover for him. So he had a, but that was a very fluid system. It was a brilliant question by Craig, and I think it gets to the heart of what we play next year. I remember watching, I was high up sitting with Ben. We watched the Bristol City game together. But I felt that, I think it was Kenlock was at left back, he was exposed when George drifted inside and we lost possession, and you were relying on then one of the other midfielders to swing out and give him a second man. But you could also see the lack of width. We do lack width in the squad still. You could see it behind the goal at Brentford, the way they were able to suddenly switch, play quickly and get a 2v1 against us. So either we find wingers or we play the diamond. And given who we've got, and particularly looking at the way Kwaner Jackson... And I was thinking, or a quick player up front. I think Kwaner struggles on his own up front. Giving him a quick, like Stockley we were talking about with Preston, giving Kwaner a partner would suggest to me I'd rather go with the diamond at the moment, just given what we've got. I've never liked diamonds. I always think they're dangerous.
Reminds me of Paul Jewell.
Yeah, exactly. We talked about them before, the nitroglycerin. It really is, when we played Stoke, they are dangerous systems if you don't know what you're doing. But either we find some proper width. I think the question is as much about what we do out on the left. Do we bring in? We're looking for strikers. We know that, but do we look for proper wingers? It's a question of that's Lambert's judgment call over the summer in terms of how does he want to balance the squad.
Stick Gwyn Edwards out there and play Jack Lancaster at right. That would be my starting wingers, but they're not wide midfielders. They're not going to give too much cover, are they? No, they're not.
In which case, then you're looking for George then to play in behind whoever our number nine will be. It'll be interesting. It's fascinating to see.
But definitely, as Craig says, use the next few games to figure out that system again. Yeah. So we're using this time, as Ben said on the show last week, rather than just experimenting, we're building something. We're having a strategy. We'll end with Mikey Penty Smith. What is your favourite Indian side dish? Tim Pashley's is a cobra. Yeah. Maybe a handful of cobras.
I like Tim's answer. Tim's answer was brilliant. I saw that. Oh, dear. Well, I have a funny story in this. My sister's 50th. We all went to Barcelona and we went to a tapas bar. There were six Irish people all sitting around the table. And so what did we all order? Patatas bravas. And it was only when basically a 4-stone sack of potatoes arrived on the table around us. We all looked at each other and said, the Irish abroad. Where would you be without the spuds? God bless them. Anyway, but I have to say, Bombay aloo is an issue. I have that. It has potatoes in it, and as I say, where I come from, this is very beneficial. Don't know about you.
I'm not going to go with a stereotype, Harry. I need to be careful where I tread here. Aloo gobi is one I would recommend. I think that's cauliflower and potato. If I remember,
that's right. It is.
Can't be a sagaloo. Yeah.
Not agree. Struggle with that.
Okay, not a fan of the greenery. Brilliant questions. We'll come back to the rest of those in our next part, where we'll be back in a day or so's time to talk about Swansea. Just quickly, for those people listening before Preston, and why wouldn't you? Where can we find your blogs, your Twitter, all that kind of stuff, Harry?
Yeah, the notes for Preston will be up with Phil over on. They'll be over on WTD or TWTD, I should say, get it right. At lunchtime on Friday, they should be. The game's on Friday. They will be up on lunchtime on Thursday. There we go.
This is what happens when we record on Wednesday.
Wednesday,
the matches on a Friday.
Weird science. We're in a strange place. It'll be Wednesday. Start again. Thursday lunchtime. TWTD. I will link it on my Twitter feed, which is at Harry from Bath.
Brilliant stuff. And you can find me on Twitter at IpsRich and the channel at Blue Monday ITFC. And as I say, we will be back to talk about Swansea. Probably a shortened version of the pod for that. We'll finish off those questions. And the flagship, for those of you who are not going to Swansea or having other weekend plans, I will be back for the flagship on Tuesday night. So it'll probably go out Wednesday morning with Stat and Joe. And we'll be delving through the outcomes of the two fixtures we're talking about and talking a little bit about season tickets, talking about relegation, League One and all that fun stuff. So join us for that. Harry, great stuff as always. Thank you for your hard work as always. Really enjoyed that.
Cheers, Rich. All the best, and hope everybody has a good Friday.
It's the promotion running. Everyone is gathered round to watch. The McNuggets share boxes are there, offering much needed distraction. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping, but in you swoop to steal the last nugget and claim all 3 points. Oh, and there is the Harry Clark fist pump to celebrate. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in at participating restaurants.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.